This is KSL's Religion Today, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner, on KSL News Radio.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today, as we approach the end of the year, I wanted to do a brief overview of the book of Revelation, which to me is one of the most fascinating books of the Bible. It is part of the genre called apocalyptic literature. This is the same word as, or the same root as the word apocalypse. And it really means to uncover something. It means to make something revealed that was covered before, something known that was before unknown. That's the general connotation about it. This genre of literature is written with analogy, metaphor, and language that would not be generally known outside of the group for which it was given. And that also leads to difficulty in understanding it. The book of Revelation, therefore, reads very differently from all the other books in the New Testament and in the Bible. But there are some books outside of the Bible that are very similar in nature to the book of Revelation. So let's jump in with a quick overview. If you read in chapter 1, verse 1, it talks about things that are shortly to come to pass. Now you ask yourself, well, how does that really work? Most people believe the book of Revelation is going to happen at the very end times, but John the Revelator here, or the Apostle John, is saying that the things in here are going to happen right away, shortly to pass. Well, there are a couple of different views about what this means. One is that it was written for Christians about things that they would soon see that were going to come to pass shortly. Another idea is that the first part of the book is about things that were shortly to come to pass. Because after you go through this first series of information in there about the seven churches and things, then it talks about things that are to come in the future. And so those are a distinction. Those two things are a distinction that really ought to be made. In verse 9, unlike in most of the other books, but not all of the books of the Bible, it says, I, John, who also am your brother and companion in tribulation. So here's somebody who is identifying himself by the name of John, but saying that he's involved in tribulation. Huge tribulation started in about 95 AD and went on for some time under the Roman Emperor Domitian. That would indicate that the book of Revelation was written sometime around 100 AD, give or take a little bit. I am going to breeze over pretty quickly the different churches and the angels associated with them in chapter 2, because most of that information is for the time in which it was written in those particular churches. But I did want to pause briefly at chapter 3, verses 20 and 21, which would give great comfort to those who are reading this book. These are the first person words of Jesus. This isn't a statement by John saying, Jesus said, and I'm reporting it now. This is Jesus talking in the first person. Verse 20, quote, I stand at the door and knock. And some of the translations that I think personally are a little bit better say, I am standing right now at the door knocking. And if anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in unto them, and I will sit down and eat with them, and them with me. And to him that overcomes, to anyone who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me in my Father's throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. Close quote. That verse 21 is often overlooked, and it really means that Jesus is promising to the faithful saints all the blessings that he received. from his father. That is an incredible promise, because if it's everything, that includes a lot. Think about it. All right, let's go on and talk a little bit about the different seals in the book that is described. In chapter 5, we have seven seals of a book. And the seals, most people would not use wax seals today to seal something closed, but these were used for security purposes during the time of Christ and after, and very much before as well. And what you would do is you would drip wax on something, and then before it dried, you would imprint it with an official seal. And if the seal was broken, you would know it had been tampered with. If it was not tampered with, you would know that it was pure and pristine and hadn't been altered. So each one of these books, each of the seven or each one of the seven portions of this book, however you want to think of it, has its own separate seal. And that's to convey to the reader the idea that these have not been altered. They're pure, pristine books, and that you can trust them. It's the imprimatur of trust that these seals convey to the person who's reading, especially in the first and second centuries after Christ. So what happens in each one of these seals is that they are typically known, according to Christian tradition, as different dispensations of the earth. Enoch is the first seal. The second seal is the dispensation of Noah. And after that, you have the dispensation of Abraham during the third seal. And of course, during that time period, you'd have also had some of the famines in the land that are described in the book of Daniel. You have the fourth seal, which is kind of a fascinating seal because there things continue and get worse. The third seal talks about famine, and the fourth seal talks about death and hell, and it's not a pretty sight or a pretty declaration that's there. The sixth seal seems to be the seal that talks about a great earthquake. And this used to be all the rage to discuss about what was going to happen right before the second coming. And it talked about the stars of heaven falling from the sky, the heavens departing like a scroll, talks about every mountain shaking and being shifted. An interesting part about the seventh seal as it opens here in chapter 7 is that the good people have a seal of God in their foreheads. This is sort of the antithesis of the mark of the beast that we'll read about a little bit later, where people have a mark on their forehead or their hand without which they can't buy something. What's going on with this? Well, the answer is that according to Jewish tradition from the earliest times, Jews would often have a memorable scripture or an important scripture to them, and they would have it in a small little box, and it would be on their forehead with a little headband, or it might be tied to their wrist. And so the box would be sitting on the back of their hand. And this is the mark that someone would look at on the back of their hand to see if they were being faithful to God, or in the alternative, faithful to the evil beast. So here you have those following Christ and those who are following the Antichrist. And that's the imagery here. We also go on in this chapter and read a little bit more about all of the tribes of the earth and what they are to be doing. All right, after our break here, we're going to move on in our discussion about the book of Revelation to chapter 8, which is the opening of the seventh seal. Stay tuned. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. We'll be right back.
Religion Today with host Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. This is a short overview of the Book of Revelation. Why? Because we live in a world today where many people see turmoil all over the place. They want to hear something that is faith-promoting and good about the future, and they often turn to the Bible. And one of the parts of is the New Testament that directly addresses the end times and the second coming, which is of great comfort to many, many people. The opening of the seventh seal talks about silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. That's a fascinating thing. If you took these seven-year periods of the earth to be the seven 1,000-year periods, which you would get out of Doctrine and Covenants section 77, you might find then that we had already entered into the seventh seal about the year 2000. And so where's the space of silence? Where's this silence for about half an hour? And what does it mean to be a half an hour? Is that some period of time or just literally a half an hour or what? Well, the answer is it's really hard to know, but it looks like some kind of a pause that was to happen. Maybe it was the pause before 9/11. Maybe it's something else entirely different. Who knows? But the gist of it is that after this pause, you have huge amounts of turmoil in the earth. You, first of all, have hail in chapter 8, verse 7. This is a plague on the earth. You also have trees that are burned up and grass that are burned up in verse 7. Then you have a huge comet in verse 8 that is like a great mountain burning with fire that was cast into the sea. And a third part of the creatures there are burned up and destroyed. You have, starting in verse 10, something that's fascinating. It talks about a star, and it's burning, and it comes down and lands in the waters. And verse 11, the name of the star is called Wormwood. What's Wormwood? What is this? Wormwood is Artemisia. What's Artemisia? It's a kind of herbal wood that was used during the time of Christ and before and after. It was considered an antiseptic. This is sort of the equivalent of hand cleaner for us today, or some other kind of disinfectant that would kill the germs, kill the bad stuff. And of course, with wormwood, there were no bacteria or germs back then that were known. And so wormwood is something that disinfects the seas of the evil things in it. It says about a third of the waters became wormwood and many people died. Well, the purpose of the wormwood is for the bad people to die. And you see similar kinds of things with verse 4, where the sun's smitten and a third part of the moon. Anyway, other people die. This is part of the cleansing process, according to the Book of Revelation, that is to take place prior to the second coming of God. Moving on quickly, towards about the middle of chapter 9, you have descriptions that seem to be those of fighters in a battle. Some even think this is how an ancient person would have described somebody in an airplane. Verse 7, the shapes of locusts, like unto horses, but they have faces and hair. And it's quite interesting. And so I don't know exactly what John has in mind as he describes these things, but maybe he's talking about bullets or the tails that are stinging like scorpions in verse 10. And this war goes on for 5 months. And that might have sounded like a long time in the ancient world. To us, it sounds like a pretty short war, frankly. But this is something that goes on and on and on. And then things seem to escalate because you have armies that are described in verse 14 of chapter 9. And how big is the army? Verse 16 of chapter 9 says the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000. Well, that's 200 million. That's a pretty big army, 200 million people. Verse 18 talks about the results of this war. A third of people are killed by fire, smoke, brimstone, and so forth, and also because of the war and the tales, which may mean guns, may mean something else. Here we move on to chapter 10, and you have some discussions about the prophets and about a book and about John. An angel said to John, "Give me the little book." And he said, "Take it, eat it up. It's bittersweet." What is this? It's some kind of a record. And the record is about the people and the nations, we learn in the very last verse of chapter 10. As chapter 11 opens, we have two prophets. And before I talk more about them, let's pause and say, well, you know, for all those people who think that after Jesus and the apostles, there will be no more prophets, chapter 11 of the book of Revelation says otherwise, talks about two prophets. And what about the people who say there will be no more Bible and no new scriptures? Well, it says that they, in verse 3, will prophesy 1,203 score days. That's 3.5 years. So you have prophets, and they're going to give prophecies. So that doesn't sound like prophecies and prophets and scriptures ended at the time of Jesus and the apostles. As we go on farther, what happens ultimately to these prophets is that they are killed. The people don't like them. And ultimately, verse 13 says they lay slain and they're finally they come to life again. And so this is quite an amazing prediction or prophecy about them and what the future brings. I wish I had more time to delve into that a little bit further, but let's talk about 666 and what that means, the mark of the beast towards the end of chapter 13. This is something that was used all the time in Greek, in the Greek language. Each one of the Greek letters had a different number. And so what did 666 mean? Most people think that it meant Nero Caesar. His name would be 666. Some of the early manuscripts say 616, and that also works out to Nero Caesar. And so who's this awful beast? He's Nero. And as you go on farther in the book, you have some wonderful things that include the second coming of Christ in chapter 19. And he will be dressed, according to chapter 19, verse 13, in red when he comes back as an indication that it is really him. The millennium starts in chapter 20. We have a new heaven and a new earth and some beautiful language in verse 4 where God wipes away the tears from everyone's eyes and there will be no more death or sorrow or crying or pain anymore, and the former things are passed away. Beautiful imagery. One of the other things that I wanted to mention about this is that the city of Zion is established, and it is enormous. It is 1,500 miles long, 1,500 miles wide, and 1,500 miles tall. Why is that important? How does that make any sense? I believe it's a metaphor for saying the city of Zion is large enough for anyone to enter who wants to. If you're interested in more details about that, take a look at chapter 21, starting in verse 16. I hope you've enjoyed this. If you have any questions, send me an email to martinstanner@gmail.com.